with SRN Sports. I'm Michael Harrington. We'll start in baseball and the American League in the top of the ninth inning. It's the Twins in front of Oakland now, 6-2. These two will go again this evening, second end of a doubleheader. Texas and Seattle are scoreless in the bottom of the third. Earlier today, the Astros got by Detroit 4-1. It was close, but the Blue Jays gave the Guardians the slip 7-6. Coming up tonight, the Red Sox will entertain the...
The following program is paid for by Rick Hughes Evangelistic Ministries.
Welcome to The Flatline with your host, Rick Hughes. For the next 30 minutes, you'll be inspired, motivated, educated, but never manipulated. Now, your host, Rick Hughes.
Good morning and welcome to The Flatline. I'm your host, Rick Hughes, and for the next few minutes, please stay with me. It won't be long, about 30 minutes of some motivation, some inspiration, some education. And as we always say, there is no manipulation because we're not trying to con you. We're not going to ask you for money. We're not going to try to sell you anything. We're not going to solicit any membership. We just want you to listen. Listen as I try to verify and hopefully identify God's plan for your life. If I can do that, then hopefully you will orient and adjust to the plan. That's my desire. This is show 977 on the Flatline. That's 52 shows a year, so you can figure out how many years we've been at it. Right now we're broadcasting in about 115 cities across America, all compliments of the grace of God. What a wonderful opportunity it is to demonstrate how grace provides every need that we have without having to try to ask people for money. Always the Lord provides, and it's wonderful to see that. A reminder of our website, rickhughesministries.org, rickhughesministries.org. There you can go to our website and see all the different books we've written. Our latest book, God's Grace and Aging, has been really, really well received. So if you're over 50, you might want to get a copy of it. It's free, God's Grace and Aging. Also on our website, you can listen to various books that are read to you by our announcer, Jack Steele. There's audio books on the website, and you can listen right there on the website and order many of the other things we have available, all for you, free of charge. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. This is a special day. Today is celebrated across the country as Mother's Day. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but the first Mother's Day service of worship was a celebration started by Ann Jarvis. And it was held in Andrews Methodist Episcopal Church in Grafton, West Virginia. That's ironic because one of the first crusades that I did was in Grafton, West Virginia. I have been to that city. I have spoken there and been in the schools around Grafton and other places in that area. But I remember very well going to Grafton, West Virginia in the early 70s. She held that Mother's Day celebration in 1907, and that serves as the International Mother's Day Shrine even today. Miss Ann never intended for this day to be commercialized, but to be a liturgical observance. That's what she wanted it to be, sort of a Christian celebration. But later in the 20s, Hallmark cards started selling Mother's Day cards, and the emphasis began to be on profit, not on sentiment. So I want to tell you today, if your mother is still living, may I suggest one thing to you. In the famous words of the Christian comedian Dennis Swanberg, hug your mother, hug your mother. This morning, in recognition of the day, I'd like to talk about mothers in the Bible. Being a mother is certainly one of the most difficult positions in life, but it's also one of the most rewarding. If the children learn respect for authority and become productive individuals. The Christian mother always desires that her children come to know Jesus Christ as their Savior and their Lord. In Psalm 127, verse 3, the Word of God says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are children born in one's youth." If we go back to the first child ever born to the human parents in the Bible, we find a lady named Eve, Adam and Eve. The scriptures tell us that Eve was created to be a help for Adam. In Genesis 2, verse 20 through verse 22, Adam gave names to all the cattle, to all the birds of the air, to every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found a helper comparable to him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in its place. And then the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. Now we know from Scripture that Eve was deceived by Satan, who took the form of a serpent, and convinced her to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. In Genesis 3:6, when the woman saw the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And she also gave it to her husband, and he ate it. This act of disobedience between these two was the first sin ever recorded in the Bible, and man has been disobeying God ever since then. But as a result of this sin, both Adam and Eve were cast out of the Garden of Eden, according to Genesis 3:24. And both Adam and Eve were given divine discipline for their sin that they committed. Adam, the Bible says, was forced to provide for his own food from now on out by farming the ground. You can read about that in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 and 19. And Eve, now that's a different story. Eve was disciplined by pain in childbirth, Genesis 3:16. I'll read it to you. To the woman God said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception, and in pain you shall bring forth children, and your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Thus Eve became the mother to three boys, the three that we know of in the Bible, Cain, Abel, and Seth, plus many others since they both lived to be over 900 years. In Genesis 5:5, the Bible says, so all the days that Adam lived were 930 years.
Before we begin, experience luxury.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB.
The official meeting of the business-to-business meeting is called to order. Business-to-business, where we always say, make every transaction a win-win-win. Our guest today is Steve Clark from Minuteman Press of Reading.
Today I'd like to talk to you about business cards.
Well, I just get mine from this.
Don't say it. Don't do it. If you're thinking of ordering your business cards online, don't do it. Keep your business local.
But they're cheaper online.
No, business cards from Minuteman Press of Reading start at just $35, and custom design services start at $29, and you keep your money local.
Hey, that's a win!
Let us at Minuteman Press of Reading take care of your business cards. Rapid turnaround time and price right. We also do full-service direct mail and promotional products at Minuteman Press of Reading.
Call 221-0400. That's 221-0400.
For Minuteman Press of Reading, where we design, print, and promote you.
221-0400. That's 221-0400.
Minuteman Press of Reading. Call today.
Good day, and welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, here with the latest local updates. June dedicates itself to raising awareness about post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and elder abuse. PTSD, an anxiety disorder that can develop after experiencing trauma, leads to various distressing symptoms. Teal, the color associated with PTSD Awareness Month, is worn to show support. Concurrently, June highlights the issue of elder abuse. As our population ages, protecting the elderly from physical, emotional, and financial abuse is crucial. Purple, symbolizing wisdom and dignity, is the color for elder abuse awareness. World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, launched on June 15, 2006, encourages wearing purple ribbons and participating in events. By educating ourselves and others about the signs of PTSD and elder abuse, we can work together to create a safer and more compassionate society for all. This June, let us unite in raising awareness and supporting those affected by these important issues. While June brings attention to significant social issues, Shasta County faces its set of challenges as it navigates a difficult financial landscape. Shasta County's budget hearings kick off with a grim financial outlook. The county grapples with a 16.5% staff vacancy rate, the potential elimination of 127 positions, and a proposed 5% budget cut across departments. County Council and Elections Department highlight their challenges, while the Health and Human Services Agency, HHSA, faces soaring public service needs and a significant staff burnout. HHSA Director Laura Birch likens managing the agency to being dropped out of an airplane at 50,000 feet. Despite the challenges, the Board of Supervisors remain committed to finding solutions and serving the community. As the hearings continue, tough decisions lie ahead for Shasta County. As Shasta County grapples with budget concerns, the City of Shasta Lake finds itself in a heated debate over proposed changes to its water rates. The City of Shasta Lake's proposed shift from tier to uniform water rates has ignited a heated debate among residents. While some argue that the change removes incentives for conservation and burdens the poor and elderly, others believe that uniform rates ensure fairness for all. Under the proposal, everyone would pay $2.85 per 100 cubic feet of water, and the monthly meter fee would increase by 42%, from $31.08 to $44.29. The city cites infrastructure costs, inflation, and a new water storage tank as reasons for the hike. To address concerns about the impact on vulnerable populations, the city is considering implementing lifeline rates or assistance programs to offset the increases for low-income and elderly residents. This solution could strike a balance between equity and affordability. As the council prepares to reevaluate the rates on June 18th, residents hope their voices will be heard in shaping a fair and sustainable water rate structure for Shasta Lake. Despite the financial challenges faced by local governments, there are still opportunities for residents to explore and enjoy Shasta County, thanks to RABA's free summer bus ride program. RABA offers free bus rides throughout Shasta County this summer, allowing residents to explore without transportation barriers. The program covers various routes, including flex routes to the Redding Airport and the 299X Burnie Express. The goal is to encourage people to experience public transportation and access cooling centers, malls, grocery stores, and other quality of life opportunities without financial constraints. Don't miss the Beach Bus, offering free service to Brandy Creek Beach at Whiskeytown Lake on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. The Shasta Connect Sunday Transit Service, a door-to-door reservation-based service similar to Uber and Lyft, is free during the summer program until September 30th. Visit www.rabaride.com for more information on routes and schedules. Thank you for listening to your Town Hall Brief. Become part of the conversation at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X.
Back. I could just listen to that for a while.
You know, it's ageless. I remember listening to the same music when I was a kid. My dad loved Creedence. And I love Creedence as a grown woman. Yeah.
Good rock and roll never dies.
It is good rock and roll.
I just have to say, you know. All right. So before we went to break, we were kind of, well, we're talking about value and money and Bitcoin, bullish Bitcoin, and things like that. If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. You can always hit us up in the chat. I'm going to say that. So anyway, maybe we start with what? The origins of money.
Well, how did we come about?
How did money get started?
Yeah. Why did we do that? Or how did we do that?
Well, what are the different kinds of money? I mean, it evolved from things that were collectibles. You know, it evolved from all sorts of things.
And, of course, you know, trade starts out as barter. So
right. One
guy grows apples, another guy is a fisherman. This is the example here in the article. And they trade a certain number of apples for a certain number of fish. But what happens if the guy who has apples doesn't want or need any fish?
Right. They discovered that over time.
So, well, yeah. You go find somebody that's got something you want.
I believe the term is called double coincidence of needs, and you have to have a double coincidence of needs to pull off that transaction. Without that very rare occurrence, you can't do it. So then you need to have a different commodity, a commodity that is, in fact, the most sought-after commodity in a given culture or society.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how, so that you have a uniform method of trade.
And this has been done lots of times throughout human civilization.
Yeah, I mean, like we were talking earlier, seashells, sand, salt.
Wampum for the natives.
I mean, yeah, it was all different kinds of things that they used to transact with one another for goods.
And the problem with that and why it had to evolve even more is because of the scarcity and aspects of it and the divisibility. So there were, you know, in money stories of years ago when a certain culture came in and was able to, you know, basically copy a form of exchange, it was counterfeit. So they were actually creating more of something that didn't belong, that wasn't the original form of trade.
This happened a couple times in history that I can think of. The glass beads and the rye stones were both counterfeit.
Absolutely. Yes. So you have to get some sort of standardized form of trade, right? For everybody to be willing to say, I want to buy your pelts, and so, okay, I'm going to take that dirty fiat of yours, and so I'm okay with that.
I think that was one reason they started niching the coins.
Sure.
That was Sir Isaac Newton came up with that idea. He put the little ridges on the edge of a coin to keep people from shaving off a little gold.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, for counting footing, so to speak. But
anyway, there's free will of a human.
That's human nature.
Yes,
always somebody out there to figure out a workaround or, you know, but that's just the way it is.
So we migrate into the attributes of a good store of value. And, you know, what's the one thing that we normally think of outside of Bitcoin? What would be, you know, a tremendous store of value?
Well, gold and silver.
Absolutely. Gold. Yeah, you bet.
Well, and silver. You know, silver is underrated. Yeah. You know, it really does.
But it's not very durable, is it?
Well, it does tarnish.
It does tarnish, and it's not so easy to transport.
Heavy and bulky.
But it is used in many, many, many things.
It is scarce.
It is, as far as we know, more scarce.
It's scarce by how much we're allowed to mine and what stores have already been found. So, I mean, it could be, what is the talk of maybe getting on an asteroid and being able to mine the asteroid and have unlimited elements and gold and silver.
You brought up silver, and I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent. I'll try to come back fast.
Did I go over the peak?
And my friend and I were discussing when the Hunt brothers cornered the market in silver. And what the system did, what the government did to squash the Hunt brothers, is they changed the rules exactly the way that Robin Hood did with GameStop recently. So that's the thing about Bitcoin. You can't do that with Bitcoin.
True.
You could do it with silver. You could do it with GameStop, but you can't pull that. With Bitcoin, baby.
Right. That's true. The schedule is what it is.
Right.
There's no conforming it or changing it or, you know.
Yeah. It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's the hardest currency ever made.
Yes.
It's the most perfect form of money ever created in human civilization, by far.
So money evolves in stages. Yes, wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of what we're talking about here, you know.
Yeah, we were talking about how it becomes starts off as a collectible, and then it becomes a store of value, and then a medium of exchange.
Yeah, and
I mean,
you see that
even tulips at one time, right? We were talking off air about how tulips was a medium of exchange.
Tulip mania. I want to say it was in the 1600s in Holland, and at one point, one single tulip bulb was equal to the value of a house.
Yeah, it was outrageous. Until nobody wanted tulips anymore. And then the market crashed.
And so the first person started selling. And the moment the first person started selling, boom, the bottom falls out.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Right. But it's like a lot of things. They start out and they become collectibles. And then they become scarce. And then people start selling them off. And then they're not worth anything anymore a lot of times. And Bitcoin won't do that.
And the author suggests that Bitcoin's currently transitioning from the first stage as it being like a collectible, if you will, to a second stage, which is a store of value. But I think we're already there. Many of us feel it's already a store of value. We would like to see it circulate and become more of a transactional currency. But there are some difficulties with that at this time, having to do with how long it takes to confirm a transaction. And that's where other, adjustments to the blockchain makes that doable, and that would be called like lightning and layer two solutions. But I'm going to stop right there and not go down a rabbit hole.
Oh, I wanted to go there with you.
Yeah,
so
bad. My gosh. Do you want to go there just a little bit?
No.
Okay.
And two, I think it's transitioning because it's being adopted more.
Right.
More people are becoming educated. More people are getting comfortable with it. You're seeing more people exchanging with it, transacting with it. I mean, some of us, I just HODL it. That's all I do right now.
Right.
Let's talk about what HODLing is. HODL is an acronym which stands for Hang On For Dear Life.
Right.
Once upon a time, it was a typographical error for the word hold. So that's exactly what HODL means, to hold. But specifically, hang on for dear life.
Right.
Yep.
Baby.
Because this rocket ship has taken off. Remember, at one time, it was less than a penny, and today it's at $69,000. Yes, inflation's involved there, but $69,000 is a significant number.
It sure is.
So when you own Bitcoin, you can actually possess or own or hold your own money. Different than with a bank. When you take a $10 bill down to the bank and you deposit it, make no mistake, legally at that point, it's the bank's money and your claim to it is only a promise from the bank. Nothing more. But you don't actually own your own and same if you even hold the $10 bill. It's still debt-based.
Right. Yeah. It's really not yours. It's really nobody's because it's just been created.
It says a Federal Reserve note on it.
Well, I know what it says, but...
So it's a debt instrument.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point, is there's nothing there.
Right.
I mean, we could actually make the same thing, except we would go to jail for printing money.
So
fiat currency.
So how does the government print more money? What is the mechanism for which they print more money?
Well, most money printing is really done when banks make a loan. That's when the money appears out of thin air.
Would that be like a mortgage, for instance?
That would be a perfect example.
Okay.
Well.
Yes.
They also just produce it whenever they need to put it out into the market to try to gain the populace confidence.
That could be, yes.
Yes.
So they would. So if we went back to the last couple of years, for instance, when we were having stimulus checks, when the economy was shut down during that terrible time a few years ago, and the economy was shut down and people were unable to go to their work and businesses were shut down, the government had to stimulate the economy, and so they would print more money, right? But that's kind of out of a normal case. Would you agree?
So well, that was, but that what I'm referring to is because if they don't print it like that and the people lose confidence,
right,
it all falls apart tomorrow.
Well, that's an excellent point because we have to have confidence in our medium of exchange. And really, it's just a trust instrument. If we don't trust that our dollar is going to be worth what we fictitiously believe is a dollar, then it's worthless. Nobody will accept it.
Game's over.
It's done in many countries. A little slight digression, if you don't mind.
Please.
There was an article that came out about Zimbabwe, how they just turned on to a new currency.
Yeah, Zin,
because nobody wanted that currency, and evidently it's gold-backed. So it's a digital currency that is gold-backed, but
that
is not Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
So, but there you go. The Zimbabwe government and the people of Zimbabwe didn't trust their money anymore, and it was so incredibly inflated with, I don't know, how many thousands percentage.
Venezuela
is another one, right.
Million Zimbabwes whatever,
exactly.
Yeah.
It seems like a good chart would be to take all of the problems that or fears that people have with other currencies and Bitcoin and kind of chart it out to see, like, what are the common denominators. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
It'd be cool to see a chart. Like,
do you know the first thing that came to mind when you said that, just instantly, is freedom. Yeah, freedom. With all of the problems of like charting all of this out, and you look at the most impoverished countries who are have adopted Bitcoin and they're using it as a form of trade, and those people are interviewed. It says, what does it mean to them?
Freedom.
Freedom.
Freedom from capital controls.
Right.
Meaning every nation state works very diligently to try to keep their currency within the borders of their own nation state to the extent possible.
Right. So, David, I didn't want to cut your thought off, but is that pretty much answer that? Or
yeah, I was just kind of, you know, as I'm listening to you guys and learning more about this, I'm seeing, you know, some of the same fears that people have about Bitcoin could be said about any currency.
Yes, it could.
So I was kind of charting it out in my mind. Like, well, it'd be nice to see a chart.
We've cool. kind of done that. We haven't actually done a chart, but right. we've done the pros and the cons of Bitcoin and past shows, and maybe that's something we need to bring back.
It'd be like smell-o-vision.
Yeah, like smell-o-vision.
Right. Yeah. We could try something like that.
Yeah, but, you know, we've done that back and forth, but right. that's a good point.
That's a great idea, David.
Yeah, you know, the positive side of this. Because does fiat have a positive side? Maybe a little tiny one at some point. But
maybe
you know
if you got
I mean?
A lot of it.
Well, yeah.
Every fiat currency in the history of the world has failed. 100%.
Yes.
You know, there's Bitcoin, and maybe to your point, David, is that Bitcoin's often subject to criticism and misconceptions.
That is so true.
So some people believe it's criticized for being a bubble. I mean, you might look at where the value is today. Is that a bubble or not? You know, it could be if people stop investing in it now and decide to pull out their profits. You know, but is that a true bubble? I don't think Bitcoin's ever been in a bubble. When you look at it from perspective of people who have invested in it, they made their profits, they got out, the value came down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually other economic factors for why that's happening. And then they come back into the market.
I can make a strong argument
that
Bitcoin is the exact opposite of a bubble. And I can argue that anything that's not Bitcoin is in fact, a bubble, other than gold and silver and probably real property, but right. the real property's last on that list. So let's just say that you have a business. That business is based on U.S. dollars. It's fiat-based. And when you really drill down on what's behind the U.S. dollar, it's a lot like the Wizard of Oz and the little man behind. Don't look at the little man behind the screen. It's a lot, and an example of that would be what I was talking about earlier, where we're given these inflation numbers that mysteriously magically don't include food or energy. Like we don't use food or energy, or you know anybody that doesn't
they don't
use
include
food or
bacon.
Energy. Right.
Or cashews.
So the fiat, and everything out there is based on the U.S. dollar. Everything.
Yes,
everything.
True.
And that is a house of cards.
Yes, it
and
is.
And it's mm-hmm. going to crumble. Everyone knows it. We're just not sure exactly when or what that will look like.
But to your point, that's why some of the countries are starting to depeg from our currency.
Are you thinking of BRICS?
Yeah,
I was thinking the same thing.
Brazil, Russia. India, China, and whoever.
South Africa,
yeah. And more.
Saudi Arabia.
There's more coming on board, but they're right. going, no, they've lost confidence.
Right.
And they're saying, no, we don't want to.
Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. That'd be the little thing I wrote called a Federalist Paper.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched a central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-trapped, I pushed past that. Now some sickle makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Yeah, my opponent. A group of men, it doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Welcome to the Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, June the 9th. My name's Christy.
I'm Linda. I'm not hearing anything.
Well, it's good to have everybody here. And we have David in the booth. We appreciate having you here.
I don't hear anything. Do you hear anything? I don't have anything in my can. Sorry, I don't have... Well, I know we're on the air.
Okay, sorry about that, folks.
I can
we're
hear
having
you.
Some technical
yeah.
difficulties.
Sorry about that. We'll just move along, Peter. We'll do what we can do.
So we're broadcasting live from the studios at KCNR in Redding, California on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. You can stream us online at KCNR1460.com to catch today's show and access our past shows. I don't like saying that word. Archives. Okay.
Archives.
Follow us on Telegram and X for updates at Tokens Radio Show. So last week, we had Edith Johnson in the studio, along with David, and we were talking Edith is a newcomer.
She is.
To Bitcoin, and David is familiar and more of experienced in the crypto realm outside of Bitcoin.
He's more of a techie guy.
He is a techie guy, but
on
he has
all
experience.
Fronts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But he admittedly says, I just don't know much about Bitcoin. So we had the pleasure of being able to talk with Edith and David as newcomers
yeah,
to Bitcoin.
We did.
And we found some information that we thought would be informative for you, our listeners, and hopefully you will think that it's good as well to continue that conversation.
And we welcome
yeah.
newcomers
yeah,
like that
absolutely.
Because she had some really good questions and concerns and kind of brought us back down because some of us get a little, you know, up the mountain. We climb the mountain and we get, you know, kind of...
Get in a rabbit hole.
Get in a rabbit hole.
Go into the burrows.
Yeah. And, you know, so it kind of makes us come back down yeah. to make it more simple, so to speak.
Right.
So people can understand the basics of Bitcoin or cryptocurrency or financial
right.
systems, period. So,
and so today's content will be a little bit more organized and not like, you know, we were all over the place as far as newcomer information last week, but this is a little bit more organized and hopefully it will come across that way. But first, before we get started, let's have a market update.
All right. Here's the current cryptocurrency prices. Bitcoin right now is $69,680. Larry Fink's BlackRock ETF for Bitcoin, ticker symbol IBIT or IBIT, is trading at $39.42. Ether is $3,699. XRP is just under 50 cents at 49.7 cents. And in 38th position, XLM, formerly Stellar Lumens, is just under a dime still.
Interesting.
It has been under a dime or at a
dime
for months.
Yeah. I like the way he said that. In 38th place.
<love that.
laughs> All right.
Thanks, Peter.
Yeah. Today's show is sponsored by Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators. Their carefully cultivated, unique strands offer elevated experience with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
If you would like to join in on our discussion, give the station a call at 530-605-4567 or hit us up in the chat at KCNR1460.com.
I don't know why that always gets me. Hit me up in the chat. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, we're so hip, right?
Yeah, we are hip. You know it, baby.
And, again, I'd just like to welcome David to the show. We have him here producing our show for the first time today, and we welcome you, and thank you so much for producing the show.
So, thanks for being part of it. And we try not to make him hover over the button too much
show.
You're very welcome. So we won't challenge you with having to manage the chat or anything. We'll take care of that today.
Yeah. And you guys can hear yourselves on the headphones now, right?
Yes, we have.
I believe so.
Yes, thank you much so much.
I didn't do anything.
Thank you.
I didn't do anything different, so I don't know. But you were on the air, so
okay,
you're good.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, I think our listeners are used to us having technical problems.
It happens like, on all the shows. Yeah. You know, when you're live, that's one thing. You can't go, oops, cut, take five. No, it doesn't work that way. Sorry. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, we found some content titled The Bullish Case for Bitcoin, and it's written by a gentleman named Vijay Boyapati. And this is an older article that was just recently updated. He first published it in 2018, and it is a long-form article. If you were to sit down and read it, it's going to be about 45 minutes, but we're not going to put you through that.
Right.
So we've summarized it, and we're going to go through the most important points of this article. But what's really cool about it is that it's organized from the beginning to basically where we're at today with the concluding statements. So, it starts off with the compelling investment opportunity that's presented by Bitcoin, along with the risks that are involved and the importance of understanding the nature of money to grasp the full bullish case for Bitcoin. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, Bitcoin is a compelling investment opportunity without any risk.
Oh, I would say so. What do you think, Peter?
Well, everything has risks, and if we want to have a good, balanced conversation, we have to discuss what those risks are.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and the bullish case for Bitcoin is far from obvious and requires deep understanding of the nature of money, which is what we attempt to do on this show, because it's just not about Bitcoin. It's about money. We've talked about gold and silver and other forms of stores of value.
Mm-hmm.
So this all plays into it. We just happen as this group here feels as though Bitcoin is the superior form of money.
Right, but this isn't financial advice.
It's a superior form of store of value.
Right.
And not financial advice.
Yeah. Just education, just information.
Yeah. And one of the things that come with that is the immense opportunity for investing in Bitcoin. And this kind of strikes home for me. I had somebody in my office the other day, Thursday or Friday, and we got to talking about Bitcoin, and there was another client in there, and I won't use names yet, but anyway, the one said, well, I missed out on Bitcoin. It's too late. It's like $69,000. How can I afford a Bitcoin? And I said, no, you're not too late. I said, there's still plenty of opportunity. And the other client said, yeah, I said, tell them your story. And she goes, well, I bought it when it was 500 and then I sold it when it was 33,000 and now I'm trying to buy more.
Right.
So the moral to that story is it's not too late. There's still the opportunity to invest into Bitcoin for everybody.
Well, and I think you said something that's really important in that conversation is that the person thought they have to buy a whole Bitcoin.
Correct.
You do not have to buy a whole Bitcoin. You could buy a fraction of a Bitcoin. They're called Satoshis.
Right.
There
Thank
you go.
You.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
1/100 millionth of a Bitcoin.
That's
is
correct.
One Satoshi.
You can buy enough Bitcoin that maybe equals a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, as low, generally $5. Can get you in. $2 can get you in. Whatever you can afford can get you into Bitcoin. And you don't need an investment advisor to do
anything.
This for you, a stockbroker. You could do it yourself. Because, Bitcoiners believe that you don't need to be a registered investor. Is that the term for it?
Qualified.
Qualified
investor, which means that you can make free choice to decide what you want to invest your money in.
Well, I was going to say, if you listen to any of the real big boys, they are in control of their investments. It's not somebody else
they
give their money to and go, here you go, Chris, do it for me.
Right.
Which they may do it, but they're involved in that process. That's why they're the big fish in the sea,
Right. Yet there's in control, and then there's in control.
Yeah.
And most of those big fish that you're talking about do trust their money to bankers, and at that point, they know the process. Understood, but they don't have quite as much control as if they had, say, self-custody Bitcoin.
Right.
True.
Effectively
became their own bank at that point.
And then back to your point, Chris, before we move on, was the person goes, yeah, but it's like $69,000 or whatever.
Right.
And I go, so? I go, what is your rate of return if it gets into the six digits like they predict? How much do you have to have?
Right. And you don't have to have the whole Bitcoin.
Yeah, you don't have to have the whole Bitcoin. Don't you think that rate of return on your money is going to be pretty good? I'm thinking so.
And today it's $69,000, and in a few days it might be $74,000.
Yeah.
So today
probably will.
Is a really good day.
Yeah.
To be buying Bitcoin.
Yeah, because.
Not financial advice.
Yeah, there's a lot of predictions of being, you know. 3.5 million. I mean, there's numbers all over the place.
So it's like, all relative.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the challenge with newcomers to Bitcoin is that it's the paradigm. It's the connection to our fiat currency. And you almost have to pull those two apart in your brain. And it is very hard. We still struggle with it.
Yeah, because we've been conditioned.
Yes, very
good. We've known fiat. That's what we have known all of our lives and before from our parents and our grandparents is fiat.
Right.
Well, so, gold and silver, if you go back a little ways.
Do you mind a snarky comment?
Sure.
Okay. Snarky comment is that I don't mind, personally, taking the dirty printed, you know, like out of air fiat just and investing in Bitcoin, a hard asset. I am okay with that.
I'm okay with taking something of not a value.
Of no value and
making
value.
I like that, yes.
I love it.
Yay, it's a win situation.
Yes, so come back to the relativity question, right? So
right.
Did she miss out or he miss out? No.
No.
Not at all.
Not at all. So anyway, there you go.
So back to this organized format of ours here. You know, Bitcoin started in 2008 by a gentleman or a mysterious person or a group of people.
Yeah, we still don't know.
Right, known as Satoshi Nakamoto. And wrote a white paper and was successful in having a transaction with pizzas, buying pizza with Bitcoin in 2009.
Yeah.
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 And here we are. So it's the first decentralized digital currency that allows for trustless value without intermediaries.
With nobody else.
No central authority.
Right.
So this is a peer-to-peer currency, which is permissionless.
Correct.
Unconfiscatable and uncensorable.
Yes.
It is if you do crypto or Bitcoin hygiene.
Right. Just good hygiene overall.
Yes.
And, you know, the hygiene thing, it sounds scary. It's not because we all have to do it now already with our email addresses and our cell phones. And examples of Bitcoin hygiene would include two-factor authentication and contacting your cell phone carrier to let them know that if you do lose your phone and you need another one, you must come into a physical store with a physical ID. That's very important to prevent SIM swapping. And I got that, by the way, right out of the user manual from Coinbase maybe six years ago.
Wow, what a great suggestion.
It is.
Yes. That's one I had not thought of, and I appreciate hearing that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have ever thought of that.
I stole that fair and square right out of Coinbase.
I think
it works.
It's just generally a great idea anyway. If you lose your phone, you have to physically walk in and get another one, show your ID.
Yeah, I have a hard time leaving it if they want to keep your phone, but that's a story for another day.
Yeah. What's important about the origins of Bitcoin is that there will only be a limited supply of 21 million Bitcoin, and it's created through a mining process that we're not going to get into today. But there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. That's it. And
How many have already been produced? What is it, over 19 million now?
Correct.
That are that is in circulation in some sort of way. They Correct. Might be, you know, held into a wallet that hasn't been accessed in a long, long time, which I won't go anymore because that can be a rabbit hole.
Right.
But nonetheless, 19 million have over 19 million have been produced, and out of 21 million that can only ever be available, and you know, the last one can only physically be produced or mined in 2140. So we've got, what, a little over 100 years before all of the Bitcoin has been mined and produced, right?
Right. Just
Pretty
so,
cool.
Yeah, just so the people know out there, to clarify that a little bit, it's not like all 21 million of them are out there and you can gobble them up or buy whatever right, right now. No, it goes in increments, so there's only a certain amount available at a certain time for a certain time frame.
So there's really only a little less than 2 million that are available, but they come out mm-hmm. in a sequenced way
mm-hmm.
every 10 minutes for the next 100 and, 130-some-odd years.
Yeah.
Is that a bit? No, 116 years.
Yeah.
So long beyond our time.
And we've talked about it before. Yeah. That was one of the things that really dinged in my head or made things start coming together for Bitcoin was knowing that there was only 21 million of them. Everything would not quite click until I heard that. It's like, oh, okay, now I'm getting more of a picture of how this works.
I'd like to take a moment to talk about what is Bitcoin, and I'm going to paraphrase Michael Saylor.
Okay.
So in Satoshi Nakamoto's white paper, he likened Bitcoin to digital gold, which in fact it beautifully is. It's a perfect model. It follows a thing called stock to flow perfectly. So you can think of it as digital gold. You can also think of it as digital money, but what Michael Saylor is loving these days is the construct of Bitcoin as digital property.
Yes,
and I think he would say that it's the most precious, high-quality, top-notch digital property out there right now, and most likely for quite some time moving into the future.
Well, and the IRS sees it that way as well.
That is true. One of the few things
That's
that
correct.
Does, yeah.
Yes.
So it's
are
a
there
true
other,
asset.
Are there other cryptocurrencies that the IRS sees that way?
Not
it's
that
only
I'm
Bitcoin,
aware of.
Isn't it?
Not, yeah.
Except that by implication, there's they talk out of both sides of their mouth about what Ethereum is, and I don't want to go too far with this.
Well,
but,
I thought you were talking about the IRS. You know, yes, they do.
Because Gary Gensler spends hours and hours prevaricating in front of Congress as to by avoiding the question as to whether ETH is a security or not. But now the government has approved the ETH ETF, which strongly implies that ETH is not a security. So they're working both sides of the street on this one all the way.
Yeah, didn't Gary, he did come out, he was quoted to say, it's going to be a while before that's approved.
Before we know.
Yeah, in fact, I want to say when they served their Wells notice to KuCoin, everything was just the usual procedure for carpet bombing all the exchanges, except that the highlight of that Wells notice was, and God forbid, KuCoin was selling Ethereum, which is an unregistered security. So they call them, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's hard.
Well, one thing I'll say about Bitcoin and property, across the board, Bitcoin is the only thing, correct me if I'm wrong, that they can't come and take. They can come take your property. They can come take anything like that. They have access to it. Most people don't own their property.
Right. If you pay property taxes,
you don't own it.
Your property.
You don't really own it. But Bitcoin, you do.
When some U.S. statesman was explaining to a Chinese president about how property works in the United States, the Chinese president said back, well, it doesn't really sound like you own your property. It sounds more like you lease it from the government.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. That is true. So,
but we're not going to talk land patents today.
No, we're not going to go there. But I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah,
we're talking,
true.
You know, assets
right?
and commodities
right.
and securities. It is the only thing.
It's a true asset.
That you is a true asset.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you had to bug out, what's going to be the easiest asset to take with you? Gold or Bitcoin?
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
Right. Yep. Yep. Definitely. So why does Bitcoin have value?
Well, one, there's a limited supply.
Well, I always wondered that from about, say, 2016 to 2019 when they talked about value. I thought they were just trying to pull the wool over my eyes. But then when I read the book, Inventing Bitcoin, the light bulb went off. That's what they mean by value, because the value comes in the fact that Bitcoin is the world's most secure computer network in the history of computer networks, and it happens to be tied to value. So there it is. It has value because it's the most secure. Everybody in the whole world has been trying to break this computer protocol for 1.5 decades, and about half a decade ago, it became obvious, like, okay, it's been 10 years. Nobody's ever going to break this, ever.
So what does it mean to you when you say that Bitcoin's value is determined by game theory and not of traditional valuation models?
Well, I think the game theory comes down to the Byzantine generals problem. And the miracle, the beauty, the intelligence of the Bitcoin protocol is that it's set up in a decentralized way that's trustless.
Right.
So it doesn't rely on any one particular person or group of persons. That's what makes it just so elegant and bulletproof, really.
And it's not backed by a physical commodity either.
No, it's not.
You know, that makes it interesting and why it's part of the game theory aspect of it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, it has been said that while it is not backed by anything the way that we think of maybe, say, the U.S. dollar used to be backed by gold, I believe it's Michael Saylor has spent quite a bit of time talking about energy, electricity, and its relationship with Bitcoin. And in a way, Bitcoin really does commoditize electricity in an extremely powerful and important way.
Right. In ways that we haven't yet appreciated.
Right. Right.
Yes, because many of us, yes, it does use a lot of energy, but we're conditioned to believe that that's bad.
Correct.
And Michael Saylor educates us that electricity's good.
Electricity's
good.
Very good
to need a lot of electricity, because then we will produce a lot of electricity, and we will do so in ways that are efficient and useful, and then everybody wins.
Right. And back to the value, what I have to say about that, too, is it's the same value whether you're here, you're in Africa, you're in China. It doesn't matter. It has the same value. There's nothing else that
That's
I know
true.
Of.
It's worldwide that value.
Is,
yes.
Yeah, that is that way when it comes to the value of it.
So a Satoshi here in the United States is the same value of a Satoshi in Zimbabwe.
Correct.
Just as an ounce of gold was always an ounce of gold in any country.
Correct.
And, you know, the warring nation states over the history of civilization have generally spent their time taking their resources to mount an army, fight with a neighbor, and at the end they take the gold and then rinse and repeat. But it was always about the gold.
And with that, I think we will take our break, and we will pick up this conversation on the other side. You're listening to Tokens Radio Show.
News from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.